This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello, my fabulous feline friends. She's back. She is the VP of Medical Excellence and Education for over 400 Thrive Pet Healthcare Hospitals. She's a smarty pants veterinarian, and God bless her, she graces us with her presence monthly. She is here to talk this time about diabetes, and we see a lot of that with cats, so we know we want to hear this. We will be back with Dr. Kelly Cairns as soon as we hear this word from our sponsor.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to 19 Cats and Counting. I am your co-host, Linda Hall, here with my fabulous BFF business partner, work wife, I don't know, lots of good stuff, Rita Reimers.
I am here and I'm excited to talk about this topic because I've had a few diabetic cats in my life. Right now, I don't have one, knock wood, but you just never know because I have so many seniors, right? So let's talk about what it is, how it comes about, how we spot it, how we treat it, all that good stuff.
Dr. Kelly, thank you for being with us again. We love you so much and appreciate you.
Ladies, it's Catter Friday.
Catter Friday.
I am so excited to be with you guys today. And this is my favorite thing to do every month. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we always
you make us
learn.
Look smart.
You
make us
yes,
look smart.
You do. And we have learned so much that we pass on to clients and behavior. We're like, well, your cat's this old, you may be in Silencia. And, you know, we're regurgitating all this information. So you are a wealth of knowledge for all of us. So in my mind, and you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, as our cats get older, they're all doomed to certain things like thyroid
just like people.
Problems and diabetes. Is that a fact as far as diabetes goes anyway?
We're not doomed. Our kitties are going to be good. And yes, it is true. As cats get older, there are certain things that they may have risk factors where they could develop certain chronic conditions. And absolutely, diabetes mellitus or diabetes, inability to regulate blood sugar, is one of the most common things that we do see in middle-aged to older cats, along with, as you mentioned, hyperthyroidism or excessive functioning of the thyroid gland, and also chronic age-related kidney disease. But it's not a doomsday prophecy. So we're going to talk about why it's not and how we can be proactive to figure out when it's happening and then make sure our kitties can feel good with that condition.
Now, I've had some relatively young cats that had diabetes. My first cat, Mischief, way back in the late 90s, I think it was, she had diabetes and it was not as well understood as it is now. But she was only six. And then she didn't live but a year after diagnosis because things weren't then what they're like now. Treatment's much better now.
What is the age? You said middle to middle age, older age. What is middle age for a cat?
28, because they're all going to live to be 50.
Amen. No. Yes.
I agree with that. Yes.
So middle age in all seriousness in cats can be roughly defined as maybe about age 7 or 8 to maybe age 11 or 12.
See, she was young, 6.
Yeah, and then they get into the senior category of 12 to potentially 20 or 25, knock on wood. So what might have happened with your kitty, and it's always hard to say, but what might have happened is that your kitty might have had one of the big types of diabetes that we call type 1, which we can see earlier in age. Cats are a little more likely to get what's called type 2, which does develop more as they get older related to some risk factors that accumulate over time that we can talk about.
One of the things I noticed about Mischief is she started smelling like rotten fruit. So that was my first indication something was amiss. Yeah, she did. She smelled like rotten cantaloupe. It was awful.
Well, what you might have been smelling is something we call ketones. So when any patient has diabetes and it's not regulated well, and they're having what we call a crisis, the body will make these compounds called ketones in an effort to get energy. Because when you have diabetes, you can't get that sugar in your bloodstream into your cells, because to do that, you need a hormone called insulin. And with diabetes, you don't have enough insulin, or the insulin you have isn't working. And so what can happen is the body's trying desperately to get energy for brain function. And the body makes these things called ketones. And interestingly, they smell kind of like that. But a little bit of trivia for you, some people can smell ketones and some people cannot at all. I am one of those people that absolutely cannot smell them whatsoever.
But I guess I can.
If you can.
I guess so. So what other signs, other than our cat smelling like rotten cantaloupe?
It was really bad.
What are some of the other signs we should be looking for?
Okay, knowledge is power, right? I always love it when we can tell our Kitty Lovin' friends what to look for. So because when you have diabetes, you cannot get that sugar into your cells because you don't have that hormone insulin. You have way too much sugar floating around in the bloodstream and in the body. And the most common symptoms for that will be increased thirst and or urination. Usually the two of those go hand in hand. You're peeing too much, so you get dehydrated, so you want to drink more. Or you're drinking too much, so then you pee more because you're drinking more. And we also can see a ravenous appetite with weight loss. So there's not a lot of things that will cause that pattern. Usually, you know, if I'm eating way, way too much, I'm probably going to pack on a few extra pounds. But when we see a kitty that is eating a lot, seems starving, but losing weight, there's only a few things that cause that. And definitely diabetes is one of the things on the short list, because even though the kitty is eating, the body and the cells are not able to get that nutrient inside the cells. Hence, the cat feels like it's starving, but it's losing weight.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's what I saw with Mischief and also with Mimi that we took in. Remember how tiny she was?
Yes. And I was thinking about the peeing, because I remember you saying to me when we got Mimi, we were told she's diabetic. She's on this dose. It wasn't a very big dose. And Rita's
wasn't
had
enough
experience with this. And she said, that seems like a small dose. And then she said to me, this cat's peeing up oceans. I don't think it's enough. But I want to point out that she then made an appointment with veterinarian. She didn't say, oh, this cat's peeing, this isn't enough, I'll give her more. She took her to the vet. So you're giving us all this information to suspect, but we still don't want to self-treat, right? We want to take her to the vet.
You bet. You guys know well enough that everything always ends with, if you're concerned, see your veterinarian.
That's right.
Now, here's the good news when you do that, is that your vet will, of course, ask a bunch of questions about thirst, urination, appetite, energy level, vomiting, diarrhea. All those things we're always going to ask you every time. Your vet's going to do a great physical exam. And then your vet's going to do some basic diagnostic tests, blood and urine tests, to be able to see what's going on. And the good news is that diabetes is pretty easy to diagnose with those routine tests. So no test is perfect, and some things can be really hard to diagnose or require a lot more advanced testing. Diabetes is one of those conditions that is actually pretty easy to be diagnosed with some pretty non-invasive routine blood and urine tests. And those tests allow your veterinarian to also rule out other things that could be going on that can also cause increased thirst and urination, or those other symptoms, like maybe chronic kidney disease or potentially other endocrine conditions like hyperthyroidism. So the good news is when you get to your vet with those tests is going to be able to give you a wealth of information to let you know what you need to do.
Is diabetes one of those diseases that comes with other diseases? Like, for example, I had a cat that had thyroid problems, and he went for that iodine treatment, you know, and my vet said, you know, he's going to get treated with this, but as soon as this is taken care of, he's going to have kidney issues, because those things come together. Is that true with diabetes? Do other conditions come along with it?
Not necessarily. We always can have an older kitty that might have different diseases existing at the same time that aren't intrinsically related to one another. So a kitty with diabetes is not inherently at increased risk to get a bunch of other things. It can absolutely be seen as a sole entity.
Okay. I'm glad you said, you know, we're not all doomed, because probably half or better of my cats are riding right now between 10 and 15. And so I'm on the lookout, right? Like, what's coming? What are we going to have to do? So I suspect my cat has diabetes. I take it in. The vet says, yes, my cat has diabetes. Now what? Can I treat this at home? Is the vet going to treat it? Is this curable? That's a lot of questions at once.
No, that was my next question. Is this a forever disease or is it curable?
Yeah. So the rule is that it is a generally a chronic condition that will require lifelong treatment, but we can unpack some nuances of that in just a little bit. Now, the good news is, though, it is often very treatable for a very long time. Yes, there's always the potential for complications. There's always the potential for potentially life-threatening complications. One of the things we worry about the most is when the diabetes is really unregulated, we can get something called DKA, or diabetic ketoacidosis, which can make a kitty very sick. Their bloodstream can get very low pH, or what's called acidosis, and they will need to be treated in the hospital with IV treatments, intensive care, IV insulin. But absolutely, if they recover that from that acute crisis, which, knock on wood, in most instances they do, they can get back on track. Okay. Now, where we worry a little bit more about diabetes being potentially difficult to regulate or potentially be more concerned for a poor long-term prognosis might be if a kitty also has multiple other unrelated diseases, because now you're trying to balance multiple conditions where treating one could upset the apple cart for the other. My own kitty Bean was an example of that, where I was able to manage his diabetes for quite a long time, but eventually he also had multiple other conditions, including hyperthyroidism, very advanced kidney failure, some heart issues, and then you're just managing multiple conditions in that kitty, which again, may not be as easy or as favorable for long-term, but there's still things we can do in that setting. So bottom line is, it is usually a lifelong condition that is chronically treated, and we can definitely talk about the different things in the toolkit for treatment.
Is there a way to avoid diabetes, or the things we do that contribute to their potential for getting the disease?
Guys, no, I love you guys. Ask the most amazing questions that are so insightful. So this is kind of cool. You guys know I love it when cats are not small dogs. So this is probably another example of that. So in really broad strokes, there's two big types or classes of diabetes. There's type 1 and type 2. And humans also have two general types as well as dogs. So type 1 is that classic, we don't really know why, but an animal is just not able to make insulin. And so that is the insulin dependent diabetes. They can be younger, they can even be kids. So people that will get a type 1 diabetes where it comes on when they're children. And that condition is typically insulin forever, along with diet and other things. Now, dogs will get type 1 diabetes pretty frequently. Cats can, but cats are more likely statistically to get type 2 diabetes, which is basically that over time, there's a variety of things that make them resistant to insulin. And their cells that make insulin in the pancreas are working so hard over time, going uphill in the snow both ways, that eventually, because the body's resistant to all the insulin that's being made, that those beta cells in the pancreas just frizzle out and take a permanent nap. And so that absolutely can be caused and comes on by, or can be tipped into the edge for a cat to get that type 2 if they have those risk factors. So when you say, are there things we can do to prevent it, or are things that we might be doing that are causing it, or are there risk factors? The average cat that's getting type 2 diabetes, that is middle age to older, one of the biggest risk factors is obesity. And also what they're eating tied to obesity, including excessive carbohydrates. So there are absolutely things we can do for a patient that's at risk, or what we call pre-diabetic for cats, just like we do for people that might be pre-diabetic. And there's even, when you see your vet as part of proactive wellness exams, remember, part of that involves proactive diagnostic testing. And there are, for those kitties that might be at risk, some tests you can do, just like people, to see if they are pre-diabetic.
So if you're feeding a grain-free diet, are you pretty much assuring your cat will never get diabetes, or is that not the case?
I want it to be that simple, but it's not that simple.
Of course not.
There's no strong evidence that feeding a grain-free diet is going to prevent diabetes. And there are some potential long-term risks for some kitties with a grain-free diet. So definitely, if you're thinking about going grain-free with any kitty, talk to your vet first just to make sure and get their recommendation. Generally, we don't do diets preemptively to prevent diabetes in all cats. But however, if we have a kitty that's pre-diabetic, your vet is going to be talking to you about dietary changes. And the single biggest thing you can do to lessen the risk through the dietary change is less calories, and so that they lose weight. And your vet's going to be talking to you about a lower carbohydrate, slightly higher protein diet.
Okay. And I suppose choosing the right grains too. I mean, grain-free doesn't, there's crap grain, right? Like,
well, let's
just
get
like
back,
us.
Let's get back to that after we have to take a little break. But when we get back, re-ask your question. Let's get back
yes,
to
ma'am.
That.
Yep.
We'll be right back.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your Cat Tree Tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. cattreetray.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with 19 Cats and Counting, the awesome Dr. Kelly Cairns. And of course, Linda, my best friend and writer and I. You were just asking a question before we went to break. I want to continue with that line.
So we were talking about grain-free, and that's been a whole thing. There was a big grain-free kick, and then no grains are good. But a grain is not a grain is not a grain, right? Just like we need carbs, or we can go into ketoacidosis, which some people shoot for, but it's not really great for our bodies. But, you know, there's a difference between white flour and white sugar versus grapes and whatever that are carbs.
So, people like me who break out from, celiac.
Yes, and- yes. So not all grains
are alike.
There are better grains than others, right? Are you getting what I'm putting down here?
Absolutely. So carbs are not the enemy. Carbs are amazingly helpful and useful to our body, but they are not all created equal. So what you put in your body matters. What your kitty puts into its body matters in terms of the types of carbohydrates and the types of grains. So that's definitely, for all cats, a conversation you have with your veterinarian about what are your cat's dietary needs related to how old it is, what its life stage is, what its environment's like, any underlying conditions. And even in a cat that does have diabetes, if your veterinarian is saying that a low carb, slightly higher protein content diet might be right for your cat, your veterinarian is going to be saying low carb and specific type of grain, not no carb.
Not no carb. Yes. So there's diet. We also know there's shots. And I have to say, we see clients that the cat gets diagnosed with something that's going to take some maintenance at home and they get scared and they often euthanize or try to rehome. We've actually taken in a diabetic cat for that reason. So when I was staying at Rita's, I made her, and I didn't want to do it, but I made her make
me. We videoed it too.
Give Mimi a shot. And I'll tell you, I was a worked up nutcase.
It's not as hard as you think.
I did not want to do it. It wasn't a big deal. She didn't even look up. She was eating her wet food and didn't even notice me doing it. So what's involved? How scary is it? Everyone can do it, or you need to have some training? Talk to us.
Okay. So let's pick it up from, my cat has diabetes and I've been to the vet. I have a diagnosis. How are we treating? So let me clarify, if a kitty is pre-diabetic, your vet is probably going to be talking to you about weight loss and also a different type of diet. They may or may not have some other recommendations.
Just like with people, right?
Absolutely. Yep. But once your kitty's been diagnosed with diabetes, most kitties most kitties will still need, even though they're type 2, they will still need insulin injections, either chronically, permanently, and or short term. So that is, and we'll talk about the insulin. Also, then your vet's going to be talking to you about a permanent diet change for a diet that is lower in carbs and a little bit higher in protein. The exact diet recommendation is going to be really specific to your cat and what other conditions your cat may or may not have. Now, there is a third. This is very exciting for me. You guys know I've talked about some other things, like when we talked about arthritis and older cats, and oh my gosh, we have this new Solensia, class of medications. Yes. Solensia, yes, which is a mechanism of action or a class of drug that is never existed before for cats. So we don't have major game-changing tools in our medical toolkit as veterinary professionals very frequently, because medicine doesn't change that frequently. But for diabetes, it's been a really exciting year for us because we finally have something new we never had before. So there is a oral, the old adage was oral medicines that people take, different oral hypoglycemic drugs that a lot of human diabetics will take, the studies have not really shown they've been that effective for cats, and there's a lot of side effects. So the old rule was always diet and insulin only, full stop. However, there we do have a new class of medication that came from the human medical space where now we have a veterinary version FDA approved for cats. That's an oral medication. One is a pill. There's another one that's the same class that is a liquid for cats with diabetes. And this may be a game changer. I don't know that we think that it's always going to replace insulin in all instances, but there are a subset of cats that are diagnosed with diabetes for which starting this oral medication may be just as good a choice as insulin instead of insulin. Okay, so that's the first thing to know about in terms of the fact that we didn't have that a couple years ago. Now, when your cat though needs insulin, which many cats do, the good news is that this is usually a very easy, non-scary thing, non-painful thing for you to do at home for your cat, most commonly twice a day. It requires just a little bit of education. When your cat's diagnosed with diabetes, I guarantee your veterinary office is going to have what I call the diabetes champion. That person is probably going to be a veterinary technician because they're the superstars of the hospital.
They are.
So give them
they
a little
are.
Love when you go, right? They're doing the heavy lift for us. And I guarantee you that your veterinarian is going to have one or two diabetes champions, one of their amazing technicians, who's going to go ahead and educate you and show you how to store the insulin, how to make sure that you're suspending it right, that it's not settling in the bottom, how you draw it up, how you give it. They're going to be there for you every step of the way. And as a board certified small animal internal medicine specialist who's treated a lot of cats with diabetes over the last 20 years, I will tell you that 98% of the time, the kitty mom and dad and the kitty itself that's not so sure initially how this is going to go feels very confident and comfortable with that kind of handholding.
I actually think shots are easier than giving a pill. That's just me. I do think they're easier.
Well, you don't have to. I mean, we're not putting something in a vein.
Well, I've been
it's not
doing
even
it
intramuscular,
for years,
right? Tent the skin. And yeah, I want to experience everything I can as talking to people and saying, well, you need to do this. I want to have experienced it. So that's why I forced myself to give this shot with Rita's nudging. Had she not been there, I wouldn't have done it.
Were we still pet sitting then? I don't remember.
No, we weren't pet sitting then. We were just doing behavior, but I was just so freaked out. And yeah, it was nothing. It really
can I ask a question about the pill, about the new oral medication? Way back when I was a pet sitter, we did have one cat that used to try to bite me. Long story short, just when I would visit, we were doing a pill. So, but I remember her vet saying it wasn't as effective. So I'll have to look up what that was. But this new pill, is it only if the cat has been diagnosed diabetic, or does it help in a pre-diabetic situation to avoid the cat becoming diabetic?
This new class of medication, this oral medication, is for a diagnosed diabetic cat.
So there's nothing to give a pre-diabetic cat right now other than diet and weight loss.
Diet, weight loss, and exercise in most cases. Yes.
Yes. Yep. Okay. All right. So we should be keeping that up preemptively as well, making sure that we can do everything we can to keep our cats eating the healthiest diet. We should do that anyway. And exercising and keeping all of this to prevent as much as possible. I mean, I understand it's not a guarantee. Even the healthiest, you see some healthy Olympian who has a heart attack. It happens, right? So same thing with the diabetes, but there are things we can do that might stave off where there would have been. Is that safe to say?
That is safe to say.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Now, there are some cats that, just like people, might have some underlying genetic predisposition where they're going to get it no matter what. For a lot of cats that get your type 2 diabetes because they've been obese a long time, you absolutely can lessen the chance that's going to happen with what we've outlined.
All right. Awesome.
I have an obese cat. He's 16 pounds. He's healthy, though. We've had all the blood work done. I just can't get him to lose weight. So if I see him starting to lose weight, now I'm like, okay, is it diabetes or is the weight loss?
What's wrong?
I don't know, right? So when you do have a diabetic cat, you know, they get diagnosed, you go home with your insulin, you've learned how to give it. That's not the end of the story, because a lot of times it takes some adjusting to get that insulin level right. So what are people looking for there to know that the insulin dose isn't quite right?
Question. So the biggest thing we look at are what we call clinical symptoms. So which would be the increased thirst, increased urination, excessive appetite with weight loss. Those are symptoms of diabetes. When we're regulating or treating a kitty, we want to see that those symptoms go away and their weight is stable. They're eating, but they're not ravenous and acting starving, and that they're drinking and urinating normally, not excessively. That's what we call clinical symptoms. What are you seeing? The other thing is going to be very strong and tight communication with your veterinarian and frequent rechecks, at least in the beginning, because the end all be all, just like with people, is to check their blood sugars. So we do that through blood testing. And there are some tests we do that can look at the average blood sugar over the prior several weeks or months. And then we also do short-term testing, which is called a glucose curve. So many of us know someone who has diabetes, a person, and we know that that person will prick their finger and check before they eat. And now what's more common is that humans will actually have a constant monitor that's always monitoring with a little tiny like sensor underneath their skin that doesn't hurt. So with animals and kitties, it's the same thing. We actually have technology that's being used more frequently now to do a little sensor that then can continuously monitor their sugar over a week period. At home, your vet may want to put one of those on your kitty. Or more commonly, we're doing a little tiny prick, usually on the ear, to get a drop of blood to check what's called a glucometer or a spot blood sugar reading every hour or two over the course of an entire day to look at the range of blood sugar levels. And that is how your veterinarian is assessing, in addition to what you're telling them is going on at home, what needs to happen with the dose. So the biggest thing I can ask folks to do is give your vet some grace, because we're just in it just like you, rowing in the same direction. We don't have a crystal ball. And sometimes it can be a little frustrating because it can be time consuming to get things on track. And so know that we don't want you to have to come into the hospital any more often than you have to. But if we're asking you to come in to do a check, it's because we think it's in your pet's best interest. And then talk to your vet once things are regulated about the option of checking sugars at home. Many, many folks will learn how to do that. And then they're able to get readings for their veterinarian without having to come to the hospital, saving the time, saving the stress. But if you're going to do that, you're never, ever changing the dose of insulin at home without getting that green light from you.
Yes, exactly.
Just doing the checks.
Sticking the blood, getting the blood draw, that's scarier to me than giving the shot. I'd rather take my cat to the vet for that. That's right. Just me. I'll pay for a vet visit. You stick him with the, I don't want to do it.
We had to do that with Mimi, didn't we?
No.
Didn't you have to get a monitor?
I got a monitor, but she passed. I got a monitor, but she passed.
Okay. Because I was going to ask about that. Yes, my son-in-law was diabetic. And so those constant finger sticks and switch fingers because it's calloused. And so, yeah, I wondered if that was a common thing at home to monitor as well.
Yeah. Well, and this is the thing. When you see your veterinarian, we're going to let you know what we think we need to do medically. And then there might be like six ways to bake that cake or different things that you can do at home versus do in the hospital. And I guarantee you, your veterinarian is going to work with you on the plan that feels most comfortable to you. Because it can never be a one-size-fits-all approach to the point that you just raised. There's some folks that actually want to do those blood sugar checks at home, and they really strongly feel passionate about that, and it doesn't scare them, and that's cool. Then there's folks that say, I want to go to the hospital for it. And you know what? That's cool. So we're going to work on a plan that you feel comfortable with so that we can partner with you.
Drawing blood is where I draw the line.
We had a pet sitter who would give shots in sub-Q and her visits. But when her own cat got ill, her vet was trying to talk her into giving shots and she just couldn't do it. It's like, this is my baby and I can't stick him. And she said, I feel horrible. And I said, your comfort level matters, right? I mean, try. And if you can, do. But if you can't, you go to your vet. There's no reason to carry that guilt, right?
It is a guilt-free zone at your veterinarian's office. Here for you.
Yeah, they'd rather you ask the question and get your cat the care that he needs than avoid and not do anything. We've got a few minutes left here. I want to make sure that we have talked about everything that, or as close as we can get to everything that a cat parent needs to know to recognize and get their diabetic cat treated as quickly as possible.
Well, you ladies know I always like to leave y'all with a toolkit. Should we recap some take-home points?
For yes, let's lefties? Do.
Okay. So diabetes is when your cat is not able to make insulin, so you can't get that sugar inside the cells where it's needed for energy. The symptoms are increased thirst and urination, often increased appetite with weight loss. It is very easy to diagnose. So go to your veterinarian, and we can even determine if your cat is pre-diabetic through routine testing. So knowledge is power. Do those recommended proactive preventive care, wellness, blood and urine tests that your vet recommends, even if your kitty's not showing any symptoms of illness, because a lot of times there's stuff in those tests that we can identify earlier than had we waited for symptoms. Good news is many cats are treated and do well with a great quality of life for a very long time with diabetes. We're going to use diet. We're going to use insulin. We may, as an alternate, be using this brand new, very exciting oral medication for cats that didn't exist before. And you need to partner with your vet. This is not like an infection where you get an antibiotic. Bye-bye. See you in 6 months. This is going to be a little bit of time, a little bit of resources with a really great outcome partnering with your vet.
Sounds
but
great.
It's so worth it.
Make sure your cat is not overweight. Talk to your vet because obesity does cause a lot of problems, including but not limited to diabetes.
That's a tough one because our cats, you know, they're inside. This is Bella. Yes.
Let me remind you, ladies, that I've got a cat who's sitting not too far away from me who eats like a whiff of nothing and yet is about 22 pounds and he's giant and he's orange and he's a male.
No.
And still doesn't have diabetes, but I feel like it might be coming and I'm trying to get him to lose weight. I empathize with our kitty loving friends on that one.
That's why I'm with Peanut. He's 16 pounds. He's 15 years old. He's fine, but I know the day's coming.
The joke with Peanut is she named him Peanut when she got him because he was so tiny. And she changed it to peanut butter because he spread.
Yep. And boy, did he.
Yep.
But he's still sweet. So thank you so much for all of this awesome information. Unfortunately, diabetes is a lot more prevalent than I wish it was. But now we know how to spot it. Go to your vet if you've got any concerns at all. I always tell people when they ask, should I take my cat to the vet? If you're asking that question, the answer is yes, you should. And of course,
you know how you can make it easier is besides inventing the teleporter, which we haven't done yet, is find a veterinarian that has wellness care plans or membership plans where you have unlimited office visits for that membership.
Your company does that, right? Thrive?
We do, actually. We do. And it's, boy, I take advantage of that as part of a Thrive community. When I even have to have my animals seen by other veterinarians that maybe aren't, that aren't me, that I want to get their opinion on. But a lot of those membership plans will also offer a discount for diagnostic testing, you know, like 10% off or something like that. Ours does. So that way, then, you know, you reap that benefit that more than pays for the membership plan. But the biggest thing for me with this is that if you have a membership, there's it decreases the barrier to entry to go in. Yes, it's still a little time. Hopefully your vet's close to you, but you know you can go in and get that exam.
Sure.
And you don't need to worry about, oh, how much is that going
to
be?
I was thinking that I'd be much more, oh, let's go to the vet. Then, oh, can we afford to go to the vet this week? Yes.
Well, the thing is, if you catch it early enough, you're going to save a lot of money because you'll be treating something a lot sooner that could turn into a major, major issue if you let it go. Well, thank you again for being with us. I always look forward to our monthly visits with you, Dr. Kelly. And of course, Linda, I see you almost every day. I never get sick of seeing your beautiful face. And of course, Mark Winter, I have to thank you once again for this awesome opportunity to be part of the Pet Life Radio family. And just remember, everyone, every day is Catter Day. We'll see you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.